Hi, everybody. Hope you're having a good week. David Capes here with the Stone Chapel Podcast, a podcast of the friends and staff of the Lanier Theological Library in Houston, Texas. Today, George Yancey, a Christian sociologist, stops by to talk about his book, Hostile Environment: Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias. Dr. Yancey is coming to the Lanier Theological Library to lecture on this topic April 20th, 2024. So don't miss it. Are Christians imagining that key elements of society are hostile to them, particularly if they're evangelical Christians? Well, this sociologist has done extensive research for years, and he thinks it's real. So today, George Yancey on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
I'm George Yancey, professor at Baylor University.
Dr. George Yancey. George, good to see you, and welcome to the Stone Chapel Podcast.
Good to see you, David.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. We've only met in person a few times, once up in your neck of the wood, which is near Denton, and once down here at the Lanier Theological Library. But you're coming to do a lecture on April the 20th in 2024. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that later on. But for those who don't know George Yancey, tell us, who is George Yancey?
Well, I just think of myself as an African-American Christian sociologist who's in, you know, different worlds at different times, and that seems to be my lot in life. There was an article done where I was interviewed by, I think, Nicholas Kristof, and I pointed out that, as an African-American man, I do face racial prejudice and stuff like that. But in academia, I'm rejected a whole lot more because I'm a Christian than because I'm Black. And so, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen.
Well, we're going to be talking in a minute about your book, Hostile Environment: Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias. You're the author of a number of books, right?
A few.
Sociology, for those who don't know it, define it. Your first day in class, sure. Freshman 101 intro to sociology. What is sociology?
I mean, if this is like an elevator definition, I'll just say, you know, think of a psychologist for the individual, sociologist for society. So we try to figure out what's happening in society. Now, the academic sociologists aren't trying to fix society, although some of us may be. But we're trying to find what's happening in society and why it's happening in society. And that takes us to the individual level, but also to social structures and institutions as well.
So as a thinker, you engage in scientific sort of research that involves lots of people, usually.
Usually, not always. There is qualitative work where you interview just a few people, and there's value in that if you know how to do it and what it means.
Mm. We'll be talking a little bit more about your research coming up. Now, here's the book, Hostile Environment: Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias, published a few years ago, but actually, as I was reading it this past week, I guess it was, it seemed to me like, boy, this is kind of right on target for where we are these days. It's published, I should say, by InterVarsity Press. Yes. So, George, what's the big idea of your book?
I think the big idea of my book is that anti-Christian bias, like anti-Semitism or anti-Muslim bias, that it's real in the United States. And that the people who have it per capita have more power than normal, because the people who have it tend to be wealthier, more likely to be white, male, tend more likely to be highly educated. Whereas when you see anti-Muslim bias or Islamophobia, those individuals tend to be white males, but they tend to be lower educated, poorer. So we have to reckon that there are some similarities between Christianophobia and Islamophobia and anti-Semitism. But there's also some differences. And I'm not trying to say that, you know, woe is me as a Christian, I have it so much worse than others, because there are some ways where it's worse for Jews and Muslims. But in other ways, it can be worse for Christians. And so it's just, you know, something that we as Christians need to be aware of, and how are we going to address it?
You used the term a minute ago, Christianophobia, which a lot of people probably have not heard. Where did that term come from?
Well, you know, I didn't invent this term. There's actually a book called Christianophobia. It's more of a global perspective. But I chose this term, and I understand there's some pushback on it, and I understand that. But I want a term that connected to the terms that's used out there, and the common term used is Islamophobia. And I think I use it for the same reason. It's not a fear, and Islamophobia really is about fear, although some people are fearful, but it's more about a unwarranted hatred, distaste for certain groups. And you find that with Islamophobia, and you find that with Christianophobia. I guess you could say Jewishophobia, but you have anti-Semitism, so you don't need that
You
word for
don't need
that.
that term, yeah. So, I had heard the term one time, Christophobia or Christophobia, but this is particularly Christianophobia. It's not the abject hatred or dislike for the person of Jesus or the Messiah, Christ. It's really more for the people who are his people, right? The believers in Christ.
And in the United States, the way it manifests itself is really towards certain groups of Christians. And most likely, Christians who are conservative theologically, maybe conservative politically. I think that's a factor as well. And the way people talk about it, while I think it does apply to Christians across the spectrum, I think it applies a little bit more to white Christians than non-white Christians. Now, I'm not saying that non-white Christians, because there's some famous cases of non-white Christians who face Christianophobia. But I do think, when you hear people talk about it, they talk about white Christian nationalism and things of that nature. And so I do think that is more towards whites a little bit more than other groups.
Well, I was listening to the radio, I think this morning, and they were playing a bit from after one of the Iowa caucus where President Trump, former President Trump, came out very well in that caucus. And one of the commentators who didn't like him was saying, "Well, we can blame white Christians for this. If we get Trump again, we can blame white Christians." So I just wonder how that connection starts, because it's not just white people who voted for Trump, right? It's not just Christians who voted for Trump, and not necessarily evangelical Christians only and such. But I'm just keep wondering about how, and that's more maybe more political than I want to be. I'm just trying to understand this phenomena. Is this an American phenomena only, or is it happening other places?
I think it looks different in the United States than many other places. When that book on Christianophobia came out, they really looked at global Christianophobia, and that really is more of, if you're a Christian, then you face these hardships. In the United States, there's sort of a sense of, well, you can be a Christian as long as you're not a certain type of Christian. I do think politics is part of it. I definitely think politics is part of it, but I think also cultural issues play a role in it. And so even if you don't vote for Trump, if you are, say, pro-life, or if you are highly evangelistic, or some of these other characteristics, you could face Christianophobia too. Now, the political thing makes it worse in the minds of people with Christianophobia. So, politics does play a role in this. But I think it's a mistake to think this is just political.
It's more than that.
Yes.
So it seems like it's the weight of it is felt more, like you said, among the elite, maybe among the educated classes, and particularly it figures into college education, higher education.
Yeah, I love to talk about cultural institutions. And so education is definitely one of them. And I know that we can focus a lot on that. But there's also the media, there's also arts and entertainment. So there's other ways, and culture, people underestimate how important culture is in determining what's acceptable in society. So when Christianophobia has much more of a stronger hold on our cultural leaders than, say, Islamophobia, that's why you get stories in the media, and we'll get to the education soon, but you get stories in the media that are sympathetic to Muslims in ways that you probably won't see very often that are sympathetic to Christians. What that does is communicates this group is acceptable, this group is not. And a lot of people, they take those lessons very well.
But in the area of education where you live as a sociologist, is sociology one of those places where you find few Christians or a lot of Christians as a discipline?
That's an interesting question because, and the reason why it's interesting, if you compare to the rest of society, you find fewer. If you compare to something like, say, English or anthropology, you'll actually find a few more. So, yes, it's low, but if you look at between social sciences and humanities, it's probably not as bad as some of the other ones.
Well, I know Elaine Eklund is at Rice University has done a lot of work looking at science, people in the sciences and the, you know, wondering how does faith and science sort of accord. And by that, that would be include sciences like your science, but also, quote, the hard sciences like biology and chemistry and physics. And there's actually more Christians a lot of times in those places than we would imagine.
In the hard sciences, you actually find a higher percentage of Christians. And something like engineering, I think, is pretty good. Agriculture is pretty good. In the hard sciences, you actually find more. Now, in most of the hard sciences, they're still getting less than the total population. So Christians are still underrepresented, but they're not underrepresented as much.
Well, let's talk about your research, the research that you've done, but also maybe add in some of the textures of research that you know is out there that other people are doing that seems to be able to be replicated and seems to be true. What have you found yourself in the research that you've done?
Okay, well, I've already mentioned one find that I think is very important, is that people who have Christianophobia tend to have cultural power. That you'll tend to find them more in the cultural institutions. They tend to be highly educated, tend to be wealthier. So they have a power that's there. I also found evidence in education in general that there's evidence of discrimination against Christians. One of the research that I did, I sent out a question and I asked, if you knew this person was this, whatever this is, would you be less or more likely to hire them? And I actually thought that it'd be more political bias than religious bias. I expected some of both, but more political than religious, because there's actually fewer Republicans than Christians in academia. But it was much more religious bias. If people saw about half of the respondents say, if we find out you're a Christian fundamentalist, we're less likely to hire you. About 40% were that way about evangelicals. So if you've been in academia, you know, if you have one or two people on your committee who don't like you, that can be enough to doom you from getting a job. So that's something that we have to just deal with, that there's a bias. Now, you can see the bias in other ways, but, you know, this is a documented bias. There's research that shows that in general, there's biases when it comes to getting a grant or getting published or things of this nature. And so if you try to publish something that doesn't fit in with the narrative, it's going to be harder to publish. Not impossible, but harder to publish, which is one of the reasons why Christians have a harder time publishing things that may fit a narrative that's more sympathetic to them. So those are some of the things in academia that we're aware of. You know, I think just overall, the way Christianophobia works in the United States is that the cultural institutions create a narrative that's anti-Christian in many ways, and then Christians themselves have little influence in the mainstream narrative. And then that can lead to things such as, you know, people being fired or things of this nature. It's less about physical harm, more about losing your stance and culture.
A lot of times people talk about Islamophobia, they talk about violent responses.
Right, yes. Right?
But not so much with Christianophobia then.
I'm not saying it never happens, but it's right. Less likely to happen. That's why I said, you know, don't say, hey, I wish it was Islamophobia, because they have their own set of issues.
Right. Well, one of the chapters that you write is entitled, Are Christians Responsible for Christianophobia?
Yes.
Which is an interesting chapter. It sounds like you're blaming the victim at that point.
Right.
You know, you deserve this. You know, you deserve what's happening to you. What were you hoping to say in that chapter?
Well, what I want to say is that, you know, there are some people who do not like Christians, and they have a reason for not liking Christians. That Christians, we are fallen creatures, and we don't always attend to the issues we should. And there are some people who have been mistreated by people who call themselves Christians or people who actually are Christians. Now, I want to be very clear about this. I don't think that Christians are responsible for people who hate them. But we need to try to minimize the reason for the hate as much as possible. Any more so than I think a person is entitled to be racist against blacks because a black person mistreated them in their life. Mm-hmm. There are African Americans out there who are criminals, who do things that are untoward to other people. And that may happen to a person who's white. And that black person should, you know, who does that should be held accountable. That doesn't mean you're free then to hate blacks in general. And because some Christians treat some people badly, doesn't mean that we should be free to engage in Christianophobia and treat a whole group of people as if they don't deserve jobs or they don't deserve their place in culture.
One of the things you talk about in the book is friendship. I don't want to say an antidote, but as a way of beginning to sort of stem the tide of this kind of thing. Talk a little bit about the role you think friendship can play in trying to repair maybe some of the damage that's been done, maybe by other Christians, but still it could be directed toward me. But what does friendship do for us at that point?
Yeah. One thing we know from contact is when you're in contact, you develop friends. It makes it harder for you to hate that people as a group or to stereotype them as a group. And so one of the problems is that in our society, we've segmented ourselves so much on social media, even where we live. And part of what's happened is for some people with Christianophobia, not all, but with some, they don't know any Christians, or the Christians they know as acquaintances, or they know them as workers or things of this nature. And so somehow we have to break through some of that. That's not going to be the only solution, but there's going to be multiple solutions we have to look at. But one of it is that, yes, as Christians, we want to witness and evangelize, but sometimes a friend. And sometimes we just need to let people know that we're human. And that, you know, we're not this weird creature that they see on TV. I mean, when's the last time you saw a character on TV that's Christian that was sympathetic? And maybe the only sympathetic Christian they're going to know is someone that's a friend.
A number of people that I know say that they think that the real bias is more of an anti-Catholic bias than it is an anti-Protestant bias or just anti-Christian. Is there research that shows more against Catholicism and Catholics than the rest of us who are Christians?
That probably was true like 100, 150 years ago. Okay. With groups like the Know Nothings and the anti-Catholic bigotry that was out there. And there still is anti-Catholic bigotry out there. I'm not saying there isn't. But everything I've seen shows that it's more against conservative Protestants than Catholics at this point in time.
So what is it we can do, Dr. Yancey? What is it we can do as Christians? You mentioned friendship as a way of stemming the tide. Are there other things, a couple of other things? Now, you detail some of that in your book, so I don't want to take everything out of your book and talk about it here because I want people to go out and buy it. And as we're talking to George about his book, we'll talk about that in a minute. But are there other things that we can do?
Yeah, I guess you could think of this as going on the defense and going on the offense. I think on the defense, I think we have to build our Christian communities. Because, you know, I can tell you as an African-American, one of the things that saved us is that we had a black community. And I'm not saying that Christianity is like being black, but I'm saying that there's a lesson to be learned in building your communities, you know, your church and other churches, knowing that we are in this together, learning, building our own economic structures for ourselves to protect us against intrusions into our economic rights, communities to help raise our kids, to socialize them. You know, I think that that's very important to think about. As far as the offensive, I don't want to be offensive as attacking because we're not taking the nation back for God anytime soon unless Jesus really comes back soon. I mean, I think we'd be realistic about that. We're not going back to the way it was. But what we can do is get a seat at the table. And the way we're going to do this is that we're going to have to go into the mainstream cultural institutions in the arts, in media, and yes, in academia. We're going to find ways to support people to go into the mainstream of these cultural institutions and to have an influence, to be those friends, be there to review that paper that you know is just an attack on Christians and to, you know, help to redirect it, to be a voice. So we're going to have to do that. And that's a long-term project, I know, but this is a long-term issue. So those are two things I would say off the top of my head that we're going to have to think about. Protecting ourselves by building our communities, but also going into the institutions that right now we're not welcome, but we have to make our own welcome.
We got to figure out a way, and I like the way you said it, we're not going to win back this nation. What we are going to be able to do, we think, with some hard work and intentionality is get a seat at the table. And having that seat at the table, both in the arts as well as in academia and in the media, all that we think will be at least a way of helping stem the tide of this Christianophobia. Yeah. Dr. George Yancey, thank you for being with us today to talk about your book, Hostile Environment, Understanding and Responding to Anti-Christian Bias. We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks to George Yancey for the conversation today about Christianophobia. It's a new word for me. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you got something out of it. Apparently, it's real, and it's a threat if you're a follower of Jesus. We look forward to his lecture at the Lanier Theological Library, April the 20th, 2024, in the Stone Chapel. Now, if you missed it, you can find it on all of our lectures on our YouTube channel. Be sure to check that out. Now, if you're new to this podcast, we're glad that you're here. But if you like it, if you really like it, please rate us highly. It will help other people find us out there in podcast land. Subscribe as well. We drop a podcast every week. Now, next week, I think it's Alistair McGrath. And what is he talking about? Well, C.S. Lewis, of course. Thanks to Kathy Capes for editing this and all our podcasts. Thanks to Phil Keggy for our music. Till next time, I'm David Capes. Thanks for listening.